Welcome. My name is Matt. This is David. I'm going to open up with just a question. David, tell me a story or what's a story from your early career that we need to know to give us context of what we're talking about today.
I thought about this and I had all these stories that were kind of like post-college and whatnot, but honestly, I think one of the most foundational things for me is when I was old enough to start thinking about, hey, what am I going to do with my life?
When you were three?
No, I was not one of those guys. I had a lot of fun growing up. My mother played a huge influential role. And the only best way I can describe it is she let me dream. And she encouraged me. And she would talk about, you know, hey, anything's possible. And so that sort of gave me a confidence, which is kind of interesting. And so by the time I get to school, you never know. Some people are like, I know people that were like born as doctors at 3 years of age, mm-hmm. and they just knew this is what I'm meant to be. Or, you know, Scott Patty knew he was going to be a pastor when he was 16 mm-hmm. or whatever. But I didn't know what I was going to be, but I was okay with that because I thought anything's possible. And so we'll get into this later, but then as things evolved, you know, then you have to start kind of figuring it out. Mm-hmm. And how about you? What was your most foundational
thing? Man, wait, just real quick. Who here like knew their calling from a young age and they're doing the thing that they were? Come on, who's being shy? No one? Hey, look, all the possibility in the world. I for sure, my dad didn't go to college. He's a pilot. He flies corporately for private companies or private family offices. And so, you know, when I, as the oldest of six kids, approached college, my dad was like, are you going to apply to college? We never visited schools. I didn't receive any coaching from my parents. But like the next logical thing was college. So I went to college. You know what I mean? Like that was me so much of my, up until I would say I was 30. It wasn't that I was drifting without excellence. It just, I was like, man, there's so much I could do. So why don't I just be open to doing everything?
Yeah.
I think when I discovered my calling was definitely in my early 30s mm-hmm. after a rich gathering of opportunities and thinking about what could be.
And that's why it's good that we're doing this today. Yeah. That's kind of what's pushing us and motivating us to talk about this stuff.
Yeah. From a story perspective, I remember 2008 was my senior, my fall of 2008, October of 2008. Worst month of the recession, I was interviewing for jobs coming out of college. And on the left hand, I had an offer letter or an acceptance letter to seminary to go and pursue vocational ministry. I was saved in college. I met the Lord in college, and I was like, of course, what am I going to do? I'm going to go be a pastor. That's the highest calling. I love how Missy was like D tier, you know, management consulting, you know, B tier. So I had you know, A tier, go to seminary, and I had D tier, go take. I had a signing bonus to go and join one of the big four accounting firms, Deloitte, to do consulting and advisory for them. And I was like, that's D tier, right? Absolutely not. Like, I'm a Christian and I love the Lord. I got a passion and fire. I'm not going to do this. And I can think of two times since leaving my house that my dad assertively gave me advice versus asked me questions. And this was one of the two times. And he said, Matt, you need to take the job offer. You can always go to seminary 2 years from now. You can always go back.
That was good advice, man.
Yeah. But you won't always have an offer to go and pursue this career. And just when I think about that, it's like, how do you think about options and make decisions?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I ended up in the business school for the most fashionable, thoughtful reason. I went to my advisor in college and said, okay, I'm looking for a pathway. How can I get a degree without having to take a foreign language? Mm-hmm. Well, you could go into business school. Sold. I'm in it. So I went to business school. Not the most noble ways, but what?
And look at the Lord and how he's blessed that.
He does that, yeah.
Awesome. Let's before we dive into principles, I just want to kind of ground us in what we're doing today. Our aim is to discuss principles for setting up your career or the stage of life that you're in for a win. And so I want to talk just real quick. What is a principle? When we say we're going to talk about and discuss principles, a principle is a concisely worded statement of truth that transcends circumstance. So it's something that's true regardless. regardless of circumstance. And it's short. It should be easy to remember. It should be able to, you be able to recall it and apply it to multiple situations. Mm. So that's a principle. We're going to talk about 8 principles, things that you can take with you and apply to your circumstances. And then setting up for when. I want to talk to you, you know, you're the one who came to me and said, Matt, I want to do something for early career or folks that are wrestling through a transition, like to set aim. So like, what does winning look like at the end of this discussion? What do we want for them?
Yeah, I think from a motivational standpoint, when I thought about this is like, I didn't have a lot of intentionality as much as I probably would have benefited from. And, you know, again, we all come from different experiences and God is faithful and gracious with all of us. But for me, I see this, the world is chaotic right now. The world, there's so many choices out there, more than ever before. And so my vision is that everybody would walk away with sort of a trajectory. Mm-hmm. So a win would be, I have this trajectory. What is a trajectory? It's like thinking about where you want to end up. And just, so yeah, a couple years ago, I was reading in Daniel 6, and you know, the first 3 verses of Daniel 6 are an incredible resume of the kind of man he was, the kind of excellence he worked with, the kind of respect he had by his peers, and the kind of man of God he was, all these things. And so I'm sitting there going, that's a resume. And then I found out later, oh, he's in his 80s. So I'm going, we don't get there quickly, but could that be a trajectory for us? So that's what I hope we can walk away with, an intentional trajectory.
So know that a trajectory is possible. Feel a little bit of confidence about picking that directory and then trajectory and then doing. Like, leave this and say, hey, what trajectory am I on? Where is my aim? And what are the things I can do to support it? Yeah, that's awesome. Well, okay, let's jump into the principle. The first one is good news. What's our first principle?
Good news. God is already working out a plan for you, for your life. God is working out a plan for your life. That's the principle. Proverbs 16:9 says this, for the mind of man plans his way, but the Lord directs each step. Almost sounds like an oxymoron. Well, wait a minute, if God's going to, what do I need to think about anything or plan or do anything if he's going to work it out? Well, he is working out a plan, but part of his plan for you is that we would use the minds he's given us. And that word in that proverb actually doesn't just mean you're a thinker. You know, your what comes out of your brain. It actually means your inner person. So it includes your heart. It includes your mind, your feelings. It's all of that balled up into it. And so I think, to me, that's really cool because we have this freedom to think and dream and imagine and plan. And it says the mind of man plans his way. We're supposed to plan. Like, the person that sits around, oh, man, God's just going to, like, he's going to write my vision on a cloud. That's not very practical. And so it was very freeing for me to come across and discover this a little bit later in life, but that I'm supposed to be planning, and yet, in the end, God is a God that's sovereign, and he will get you where he wants to get you. And so, I don't know, Matt, what you think, but to me, just that truth should free us up to take risk, to stretch and maybe think about things that might not seem as logical.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, we have to do the next thing. And so, like, for me, I was in business school. I had one elective to take. I'm trying to graduate. I've had a heck of a time, so much fun in college. I think I learned a little bit. And I'm sitting there, and, I'm looking. I need one more elective. Oh, what's this thing? I heard that professor's pretty good. It's real estate. I didn't know anything about real estate. Last semester, I take that class. I was so stirred by real estate, I had no clue. That was the hand of God in my mind. And then I even started reading an extra book. My roommate and I, during that semester, went out and bought a rent house in Waco, Texas. It was listed for $10,000. We were great negotiators. We got it for $97.50.
There you go.
And we bought that little house. I had a girlfriend at the time, who I later married, and she helped me paint the house, and we leased it out, and so all of a sudden, I'm in real estate, and it was just like, because it made sense. It was just, I had to use my mind, and then all of a sudden later, it's like God was unfolding his plan all along. So it's beautiful. That's good news.
So you were in Waco before Fixer Upper. Did you hold that property until the Joanna Gaines showed up?
Listen, this property would have never made Fixer Upper. It was way, way worse than that.
Okay, so God is working out a plan for your life. I definitely, I've got some stories for this, but before we get there, like, where do you think you went wrong, or where you missed this principle in a season in your life that would be helpful for us to hear?
I think we can easily err on presumption.
Yeah.
And call that faith, and so. The good news is my mom gave me this big vision and let me dream. You know, there is a downside to that like, okay, well, I'm going to have to, like, I got to work. I got to go do stuff. And so the best thing that happened is I had to work my way through college, so I always had jobs. And so you start doing jobs, and I found out while I was doing these jobs that I could sell stuff. And so I sold everything from water purifiers, books, cemetery lots. I mean, they were
cemetery lots.
Yeah, they were dying to get them.
But you've used that but, before.
I know I have. It's been around a while. So anyway, I would say the danger would be presumption.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna give you 8 principles, but I'm sorry, I might give you 20 more. So just throughout there, you can add it somewhere else. The principle that I think about around this is this idea that, like, a great vision. Vision is where you're going, right? It's some future reality that has not yet come to pass. So you've got a vision for your career. People call that a plan. That's not a plan of the steps you're gonna take. A vision is where those steps take you. Great visions are grounded in things you can control. When I think about a man plans his ways and the Lord establishes his steps, he is calling us to have a plan, to have a vision, but it's a reminder, like, what can we control and what can't we? When I showed up at college, I chose supply chain management as my major because they offered me in-state tuition. I was from Virginia. I went to UT Knoxville, go Vols. And at the time, you could go to school in a state school in Tennessee if you studied supply chain because Virginia didn't have a program. Well, I didn't know what supply chain management was. I just know I wanted a business degree, and it was going to save me money. And sophomore year, I take my accounting 201 class, and I'm doing pretty well in it. The professor pulls me aside, come to my office. I said, okay, what's up? She's like, I think you should be an accountant. Definitely at the bottom of the list of the things that I thought I wanted to be. I was like, I have personality, so I can't be an accountant. Turns out, by the way,
any accountants in the room? Any accountants? Okay, you're good. Go ahead.
Maybe a budding one. We talked about this earlier. We'll see.
Don't listen to
me. Yeah, I know. Come now. So anyway, so the idea was, I'll study to be an accountant. This professor laid out, I can do both majors. She gave me the next 5 semesters. Here's the plan. You can do both majors, be an accountant. It turns out my first job was a role in accounting, not supply chain management. Didn't know that. But I was thinking through the lens of, oh, this is going to help me make my first $1 million. Like, at that time, again, I had not at that point come to saving, repentant faith in the Lord. And so I'm like, okay, this thing is going to get me what I want. It's, okay, I'm going to go do this big consulting gig, or I'm going to learn this skill, I'm going to be a CFO, and it's going to make my net worth a certain amount. Or it's going to give me the lifestyle that I want. And I set that as an aim. And the reality is that that's not something I controlled. I can't. Yeah. I even now can't say what my retirement account's going to look like. I can't tell you my 4 kids who they're going to marry. I want them to marry. I desire. I have a vision for them being married and wanting to be close to the house. But ultimately, I can't control these things. And so, as a Christian, what am I called to do? I'm called to release the things I can't control to the Lord and work with excellence, while having a plan.
Yeah, and but you have to plan. I mean, that's
plan.
The thing.
Yeah, that's
that's
right.
Part of it. But yet, God's going to make a way.
Yeah. I am currently engaged. One of my 2 roles is an executive coach. So I work with C-suite leaders, primarily founders of companies between $1 million and $80 million. And I've got about 30 companies that I'm involved with. And the thing most often I encounter early in my coaching relationships is these leaders have set their desire and their aim on things they can't control. They said, hey, we're gonna hit that 20% revenue growth next year. Well, that's dependent on your customer showing up and purchasing at that price. It's dependent on market conditions. It's dependent on not losing a key leader. Now, it's good to set a target. I'm a finance guy, but it's good to have a financial plan and a strategy and a target. But ultimately, to put your hope in the outcome when you can't control the bank.
So really what you're saying, this probably should have been a principle, it's none. But really what you're saying, though, is a big part of this is discerning what you can control and what you can't. And so being able to wrap your arms around what you can control. I can control what time I get up in the morning. Mm-hmm. I can control what I read. Mm-hmm. I can control how I spend my time. I can't control what the market's going to do.
Yeah.
I can't control how this customer is going to react to what I suggest.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the second principle. Second principle is really a follow-up of the first principle, and it's great leaders begin with the end in mind. So we're talking about setting a goal, having a plan. Stephen Covey, it's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I would highly, highly recommend this book. If you've not read this book, I revisit it about every 5 years, and it goes through like, okay, if you study sociology, if you study successful people, what things do they have in mind? Well, they set an aim. They have some sort of goal. And then they work backwards from it. I've not heard of this book that's in our, do you know what the book's called?
Living Life Backwards. Yeah, it's really a study of Ecclesiastes. It's great.
Yeah, amazing.
It's a great book.
So the idea is, like, we want to begin with the end in mind. Oftentimes you'll hear that and go, I want to begin with the end of my career. What is the end of my, or at the end of this decade. Right now we're in the next quarter of a century. So for me, 25 years from now, I'm going to have a 28-year-old daughter, and I'm going to have a 38-year-old daughter. And what is life going to be like? And so I'm thinking, like, oh, man, at the end of this quarter of a century, what do I want to be true? That's helpful, and that's good. The thing that I missed when I was in my 20s was this principle applies to this room right now. We said, what do we want to be true at the end of this session? Or, like, maybe you're starting a new semester, or you're starting a new football season. You're starting a new job at work. What do you want to be true at the end of this season? And starting with the end in mind, and you start to go, like, what is actually important, allows you then to prioritize the things that you do. And here's the exercise. I think I can make you happy. I think I can make you happy. Does anybody disagree with that?
It's pretty bold.
It's pretty bold, yeah.
Pretty bold.
Yeah. Let's say right now, I said, I can make you happy in 5 minutes. So 5 minutes from now, you're like, I don't know, Matt. 5 minutes from now, I pull out a $20 bill from my wallet, and I walk up, and I just hand you a $20 bill. That might make you happy in 5 minutes. Yeah, you're like, oh, wait, actually, I did want to go to Chipotle, and I, you know, I'm big on protein, so I want that double portion of protein, which costs about $20 these days, okay? I know, I've got 4 kids. We went last night.
There you go.
And I say, I can make you happy in 5 minutes. Now, that $20 bill, is it going to make you happy in 5 days? No. So I can say, hey, I'll make you happy in 5 days. Great. Well, what does that look like? Hey, 5 days from now, I'm gonna put a $1,000 investment in for one of your kids, or I'm gonna give you $1,000 for school. But you're gonna get it 5 days from now. That might make you happy for 5 days. In fact, that might make you happy for 5 weeks. That's a pretty cool thing, right? But is it going to make you happy 5 years from now? Probably not. Well, what about 5 decades from now? What about 5 generations from now? So when you think about this principle, it's important to say, start with the end in mind, but what end are we talking about? And so in your early careers, breaking down what's going to make me happy when I graduate college. What's going to make me happy at the end of this semester? And it's not just about happiness, but thinking about that idea of what does winning look like, start with the end in mind.
You know, it's interesting. I met a guy years ago, super successful guy, and he said that, you know, he noticed that everybody, like, you'd make a certain amount of money, and then you want to get into a house, and then you make more money, and now you want to get into a bigger house, and you want to buy a nicer car, and so there's always this kind of always going up, and he looked at it and said, man, we're gonna just frustrate ourselves. And so what he and his wife did is they sat down and they prayed about it and talked about what do I really want? What would really be great and something we would want to strive for? And they determined how much money they would live on what kind of house they would live on. They weren't there yet. But then, interesting, over the years, they got there. And then, guess what? They kept growing, but they lived in the same house. The house was good. It's what they always wanted. They had enough money, and so now they were able to do more things. They were able to give and invest and do these different things because they had chosen the lifestyle. And so it really ties in with this whole point that, you know, you have to know where you want to end up and choose the time frame.
Yeah. We decided to have kids at the age of 25 because we wanted to be, young parents. I wanted my daughter to graduate when I was in my 40s. I can still play basketball with her, right? Like, and actually take her on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know if my daughter's going to play basketball. She's taking the proclivity to volleyball. I'm no good at volleyball.
I had a goal about that one time. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Here's the passage that sticks out, and I challenge you guys to ponder. Psalm 91:3. So teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom.
Yeah.
Now, if you're young in this room, that's going to be more challenging. Why? Because you have more days to number. You have more options. As the optionality of your career, of the dating pool, or whatever it is, as it narrows down, what happens? You number fewer days, but also what you can do within those numbered days looks smaller. So I would encourage you now to practice numbering your days. How many dinners are you going to have around the dinner table with your parents? How many worship services on a Sunday morning do you have? An average lifespan of a male is 72 right now. So for me, I'm like, okay, I'm 38, 72, start doing 52 weeks a year, you start to do the math.
Dang, I'm running out of time, brother.
You're running out of time, brother. Maybe not. That's an average. All right, let's go to our next principle. What's our next principle?
Yeah, here's the next principle. No one knows you better than the one who made you. No one knows you better than the one who made you. And that may sound like a little kind of a strange comment. I'm gonna read a couple of things out of Psalm 139. So this is this is probably one of the most amazing psalms, one of the most amazing chapters in the Bible that I've ever come across. It talks about how the Lord has searched David and knows him. Like, he knows when he gets up in the morning. He knows he says, I discern your thoughts from afar. God knows his thoughts before he thinks them. He says that God knows his words before he speaks them. We go all the way through. He gives all these examples, and then he gets down and he says, you form my inward parts. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And then he goes on to say that your eyes saw my unformed substance, and in your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. So we have this compelling, powerful, just truth laid down for us that God knows us better than we know ourselves. So what do? We are trying everything in the world for self-discovery and trying to figure out who are we? What do we do? And like, there are great tools out there. I'm all for them. We use 6 Working Geniuses in my company. And so that's been super helpful for us to figure out like strengths and weaknesses. But when I think about particularly those of you that you're sitting, it's all in front of you. Just, you need to like remember, go meditate on Psalm 139. Let this truth just sink deep in your soul that God knows you better than you know yourself. So he should be part of the journey of figuring this out. It should be, and I mean that not in like some kind of a spiritual sense, but I mean in a really practical way. As you are, part of what happens is you're discovering yourself. You're discovering who you are. I'm glad, I'm going to challenge my friend Matt here that like he's still got so much on ramp. And like, I don't really feel like I hit my prime until I was 50 years of age. When I turned 50, I felt like I've hit my prime. What does that mean? The biggest thing for me was I realized, you know what? I'm sort of over myself now. I'm no longer impressed. I know myself. I know what experiences I've had, what knowledge I have. And so now I can just sit back and, you know, God's kind of revealed this stuff to me. I've had to learn some lessons the hard way. I don't like looking in the mirror a lot of times. It's not a pleasant thing. And so to sit there and then be able to know that God is in this with me and he is revealing himself to me, and he's teaching me about myself. And it's just a beautiful partnership to think about setting the trajectory for your future.
Yeah, it's powerful. I want to move on to the next one because
yeah,
I'm looking at
go
the
ahead.
Clock.
That's it.
Principle four, and this is a two-parter. Clarity creates action. Belief drives behavior.
Love that.
December 31st of this past year, I stepped up on a scale. I looked down and I saw 201 pounds. It's the first time that I'd seen a 2 on that scale in that digit in 7 years. I had worked really hard when I first got married. That was like 215. I was just starting to have kids, and I was like, dang, wrestling with my kids is hard. It's not that hard, but it's hard. I was like, oh, God, this is not good. Like, I've got to do something about this. Put a lot of intentional effort in, got down as low as 185, fit, CrossFitter. I was like, I'm fit, I'm strong, I'm good. And then as seasons happened, like, that no longer became the top priority or the second priority. And so, you know, slowly drifted, went through a season of intense stress, went through a season of a lack of intentionality, and then what happened? Well, that culminated in stepping on the scale a month and whatever ago and seeing 201. What happened in that moment? Something became clear that created an action. I'm happy to say I stepped on the scale this morning, 191. Awesome. Look, just took a little intentionality. Maybe that was just too much water weight over the holidays. We'll just call it that, right?
How's that working for you?
Yeah, you know what? But anyway, what did that create? That clarity created an intentional January. Now, how does that so clarity creates action? But there's something else. If I told y'all right now, hey, if you change your diet and eat the amount of calories that your metabolism and your level of exercise created, and they're whole foods, right? Not whole paycheck, whole foods. They're healthy, they're not processed. You're going to feel better. You're going to look better. You're going to feel stronger. How many of you would say, like, I believe that? Like, if I did those things, if I ate well, I'm going to feel better. You're not raising your hand, but I'm perfect. and let me ask you a question. Are you doing that thing? Not necessarily. Just because you have a belief doesn't mean that you're going to one-to-one have the exact behavior. Mm. Why? Because we are complex beings, and we have many beliefs. I believe that it would be more expensive, and I couldn't afford the budget of eating healthy. Okay? Maybe that's true. I don't believe that I will, with my current schedule, be able to cook for myself, and so I Uber Eats every meal, something like that. There are beliefs, and there are a lack of clarity constantly clouding your wisdom and judgment.
Yes.
To that end, is there anything that jumps out as far as like a belief you had in a season or something that was unclear and then became clear and it changed an action you took?
Gosh, there's a lot of things. I think what's interesting about this whole belief behavior thing is that you're right. We believe different things. Like, you believe those things, but I also believe that when I'm tired at the end of the day, I deserve a break. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I'm not going to do my workout, or maybe I'm not going to get up as early. But I think part of it is, do we really believe it? See, I think sometimes we need to lean into what we believe, because like you say, they're conflicting sometimes. So, yeah, I believe things like that have really made a big difference for me, like reading. You know, reading is so important. Like, when I'm reading a lot, my mind is expanded. Leaders are readers, that kind of thing. But yes, I think it's a great point.
Yeah. And so to that, you know, get practical. What are some of the beliefs that you're carrying around right now? If I woke up at 6 a.m. every morning or 5 a.m. every morning and I spent an hour reading the Bible and praying, what is your belief about who you become if you practice that habit? And then start to say, like, oh, I would become a more spiritually grounded, worthy member of my church who's being fruitful in the workplace as it relates to the gospel. If you believe that, make that then clear, right? Clarity creates action. Give yourself a calendar, put a check mark every day that you wake up and do that thing. And then at the end of the month, look, did I practice the habits that are going to make me the person I want to become? So tying identity, this is a great book on this, is like Atomic Habits by James Clear. Very entertaining and very helpful. But beliefs, And behaviors are tied to, is it clearly getting me the action I want? Is it clearly getting me the results I'm looking for? And am I progressing towards the person I want to become?
Yeah, that's good.
Next principle, what do we got?
Show me your friends, and I'll show you your future. Hmm. Show me your friends, and I will show you your future. Matt, this has been reinforced, this reality. I know it's a truth, it's a principle, but man, I've seen the consequences of this in my own life and in others. And, you know, we're talking about things you can control, what you can't control. You can control who you spend time with. And I'll just read this verse real quick in 2 Timothy 2:22. It says, so flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. And then it's a powerful phrase. Along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. And what, my story is coming later in another workshop, but like the idea, when I have been at my highest and when I've been at my lowest, the one thing that has been a unbelievable blessing and constant has been having really good friends. I didn't always make the best choices, but somewhere along the way, by the grace of God, I started really being intentional. But at the time, and I'm talking about in the workplace, and then just your friends that are outside the workplace, your people that you hang out with in church, a lot of good people. But who is stretching you? Who is challenging you? Who's helping you think in ways you haven't thought before? Those are the kind of friends we need. I have a unbelieving friend that one time said to me not too long ago, hey, you know, your community of friends are pretty amazing. And they just noticed it outside the faith context. They just noticed those friendships. So, I mean, all of these things are great principles, but to some of you, the youngest ones in here, you've got some choices ahead. Choose wisely.
Wife and I experienced two miscarriages back in, it was about eight, nine years ago. The first one, they were about 5 months apart. The first one, I was actively in a season of increased use of video games. So, you know, again, this was some time ago, and that was my chosen hobby. We had two young girls at the time, and, you know, they went to sleep at 7:30. My wife don't need as much sleep as women. This is biologically true, and it's been proven. So I'd stay up and I'd play video games with friends. First miscarriage happened. Who were the people I was around? Who were the people I was spending time with? My video game friends. They didn't see me. They didn't really care to engage with what's really going on with my life. And so, you know, that first one, I was very, very dismissive of, that happened. That's a reality. Like, no big deal. Like, okay, let's keep going. Meanwhile, my wife is experiencing
unbelievable pain. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened, coming out of that season, I was challenged by a couple of friends in a Bible study, like, hey, Matt, how's your wife? Oh, she's good. Everything's good. Like, no, Matt, I don't think she's good. Are you sure? Like, how do you know that? You should sit down. You should talk to her. You can be face to face. So what happened? So that when the second miscarriage happens, which was much later, we were about 19 weeks. It was very, very traumatic for our whole family. I was grieving the future of our family, and Lauren, my wife, was grieving the present and how it's changed. And at that, what had happened? Well, I'd really kind of said, like, man, I need to get out of this. Video games are not evil any more than sitting around and watching Netflix for 6 hours a night. But they're not always fruitful, right? And so I said, hey, I'm going to stop this. I'm going to develop some other habits. And the thing that I did is I started a board game night. I own a board game publishing company. So just that's a part of my story. And I was like, oh, I'm really interested in this. Let me get some guys together. So for the past 9 years, every Thursday night, say 40 weeks a year, I gather with four other men who are entrepreneurs, who are leaders in their companies, who love the Lord. That happened 2 weeks before a miscarriage.
Wow.
That physical presence of them encouraging me, challenging me, seeing me, completely altered the trajectory of how I responded to that situation. Has now set a trajectory for... they have experienced things, and we've been able to encourage one another, challenge each other.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Face to face.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. What's our next principle?
Next principle, you never have to recover from a strong start, but there's there's always opportunity for halftime adjustments, all right? One of the things that I see in my life is that when I started a new role, when I started a new season, with intensity and intentionality, I generally experienced fruitfulness faster. Mm. And that fruitfulness was with fewer thorns and more joy. But there have been seasons where I've started off poorly. I worked for a mega church at one point. My career is kind of wild. Worked for a big accounting firm, worked in the church, went to corporate America and did health insurance and finance and audit and all these other things, and then started this board game company and scaled it up and then kind of watched it coast down, went through leadership conflict, and now I do executive coaching on the side, right? So just a lot of things.
Pretty smooth. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no problem. like a real natural aim, you know, just start with the end in mind. But part of that is I can point to the roles when I came out of a really challenging season that I didn't approach with intentionality. Hmm. And there's a dear friend of mine who goes to this church. His name is Malcolm Reddick. He's been in and around this before. He and I started at a company at the same time in the same role. I started with a pretty lackadaisical attitude and lack of clarity of why I took the job. I needed a job. He started with intentionality and he had vision. About a year and a half in, I realized, he's progressing. He's having success. I'm not. And not in the sense of jealousy, but just recognizing he had a strong start. I didn't.
Yeah.
And so what did that make require? That required a halftime adjustment. And it was one of the most life-changing things that I did is I stepped back and I said, hey, I have not started well. What would it look like to end this season well and transition into something that I can start well? And that launched probably the most fruitful 10 years of my career was by making an adjustment and getting a strong start, finding the right leader who was going to challenge me and encourage me.
So things happen along the way, and we stumble and we fall sometimes, but we can make those halftime
that's
adjustments.
Right.
I think that's important to be encouraged by, because sometimes if we think, oh, man, I've blown it now.
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
You're young. You haven't blown it. You can make adjustments.
And it's not just at a career level or a long, you know, we talked about season, like the time horizon. It's also in a day. So
yeah.
I would say, like, whether you're talking about a new career or you're talking about how to win in a day, these two principles apply. You don't have to recover from a strong start. What would a strong day look like? How would a strong day start for you?
Clients dropping out of the sky.
Okay, perfect. There you go. I think they text you at 5 a.m.?
I mean, 4:30 would be okay.
There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
But that's not reality. What's a daily habit that?
I mean, starting out, you know, getting up, I mean, having my spiritual food and then a good breakfast.
Yeah.
And going and just having my mind, you know, framed up and refreshed. I mean, it's a great, that's a good day.
Yeah.
But then what happens is you get the call and there's a fire drill and I'm on 19 calls and everybody's freaking out and I didn't get that good start.
Mm-hmm.
I can still regroup.
Yeah. Take a pause.
Yeah.
Hey, just remember, I'm not a victim this day. I can, like, the glorious thing about you can't control what you can't control is that you can control what you can.
Yeah.
And getting that piece. I would encourage you, especially if this is not a habit you have, start the day waking up at the same time, grab your Bible, grabbing a journal, sitting down, praying, journaling, reflecting, getting a good breakfast, and getting to work. Well, where does that start? That starts by going to sleep on time. The difference between, hey, I didn't get out of bed when my alarm went off, and I did, this morning, 6 a.m., boom, up, clothes on, downstairs. There's not a lot of things that were going to knock me off course today. But if I would have kind of gotten out of bed a little late, maybe my kids came in and bothered me at night, I'm like, I deserve this extra sleep, it would have looked like a very different day.
So let's do these last two principles.
Right.
I'm going to hit mine shorter.
Yep.
Just so we have a little bit of time if somebody wants to ask questions or just talk about something. Number 7, a good name is the most valuable commodity in the marketplace. A good name is the most valuable commodity in the marketplace. Proverbs 22:1 says this, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. Let me put it succinctly. In today's marketplace, more than ever before, trust is the commodity. And where does trust come from? It's a good name. It's being trustworthy. It's being somebody who's reliable, somebody who does what they say they're going to do. Somebody asked me, how do you earn trust? and a good name. And you know what? I'd love to have, you know, a really quick principle that could get you there, but it's not. There's no shortcut.
Yeah.
This is the answer. You do the right thing, even when it's not convenient. You do what you say you're going to do, and you do that for a long time. And then, over time, you earn that trust. We have to own our own mistakes.
Yeah.
A good name is whether the economy's strong and the market's blowing up and you're doing great and your accounts are, you know, awesome, or whether you are tanking, the economy's tanking, the company's struggling. A good name stands.
Yeah. So simplicity scales, consistency compounds is something I think about. Like Dave Ramsey, what is his simple thing? Spend less than you earn, right?
Yeah.
He's been saying that for 25 years now. And it's like, okay, well, what's happened? He's consistently done the same thing, and now Ramsey Solutions, right? A company that lives in the space that I live in, like, what is their reputation? It's one of consistency and simplicity. A good name goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
What's the last one?
Last principle, life happens in seasons. Here's my encouragement to you. Life happens in seasons. And you need to acknowledge that for two reasons. One, you might be in a season that's not going to change for a while. So acknowledge that. Acknowledge the season that you're in. And two, recognize that another season is coming. Both of us, before that, you know, there's a tension to be managed. Life is long and life is short.
Yep.
Today matters and today doesn't really matter. Like, those tensions are a reality that we're constantly living in through the seasons of where are we with our families, how old are our kids, what's going on in my workplace, what's going on in my industry. And so we've got to say, like, life happens in seasons, and pausing to acknowledge that will bear you a lot of fruit. Mm. We both have had seasons where we've been in famine from a work perspective.
Yes.
I've been in a multi-year lawsuit with a business partner and lost a relationship. That season looked different. I had to change my expectations for myself.
Yeah.
How effective can I really be in the midst of this conflict, right? That was a season, and what did it look like? If I would have kept on doing the things I was doing, I would have gotten a probably different and negative result versus acknowledging this is the season that I'm in, and it's requiring something different from me.
Yeah, seasons are important to recognize them. That's great.
All right. There we go. Hey, we got 5 minutes.
Seven.
Well, you know, like, we've got...
Oh, well, that's true.
We've got multiple different clocks.
We've got different clocks.
We're good. Eight principles. Would love to hear from y'all. What's a question, either about, you know, our careers and our experience? What's a principle you want to double down on, or what's a challenge you maybe have to the reality?
Real quick, excuse me. Can you repeat any questions into the microphone for the recording?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, great. What's one principle we would narrow down for adversity?
Boy, there's a lot of principles that come to mind around that. I think, you know, the scripture tells us to consider it all joy when you encounter various trials and adversity. And so that's a big theological thought that can be hard in the consequence. But I think at the end of the day, just to know that we should be telling ourselves, if you don't have adversity right now, it's coming.
Yeah.
And just to know that it's the normal pathway of any journey. There's gonna be adversity. And so I was just praying and looking, what can I learn from this? You know, we're always thinking about how do I get through it? And that's important. We gotta get through it. If you have a financial crisis, you got to figure out how to get through it. But at the end of the day, you have to, what are you trying to teach me? That would be mine. What about you?
Probably bad growth is rooted in what you do. Good growth is rooted in who you are. And so when you're encountering a season of adversity or failure, it's really easy to cling to what are the things that are going wrong, or what are the blockers that are preventing me from doing the things that I want to do. Bad growth is rooted in what you do. Good growth is rooted in who you are.
That's good.
Always growing, right? Encounter all joy, my brothers, when you encounter various trials of various kinds. Why? Because it produces a result in who you are. And so, like, that idea of identity, again, I've been through a lawsuit, and I've lost a dear friend. And, like, what's the reality? I could say, like, man, I haven't progressed. The, the business not worth what I wanted it to be. I haven't received the income that I wanted. My stress has impacted my marriage. And I could point to all the things that I can't do or I have done, or I could point to, and man, the Lord has created in me more patience. I'm a more patient man. He's caused me to endure for the goodness of others. I am a man who is not unaccustomed with desert places. And so, yeah.
That's good, man.
Focused on who you are.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
What else?
Great question. You got thoughts on it? I do.
Yeah. Well, so, man, I've been thinking a lot about Missy's chart that she put in there. It's really interesting. I mean, in coaching, we use a lot of diagnostics. Like, what is a diagnostic? It's something that helps you evaluate a reality. And so you're trying to say, where am I on this chart, on this model? Why? Because the clarity of where you are will set the aim of where you want to be. So all of us would say, I hope, we want to be in that top right-hand corner where we are solving problems and making an impact, and we are engaging in the redemption of individuals, right? Societal redemption, and like we want that. But the first thing I would say is, well, where are you today? So you're saying, I'm in a situation where I have unbelieving friends, and you just have to ask yourself the question, well, what do I want to be true because of this relationship? If it is, I want them to meet the Lord. Well, then I'd ask you, okay, what are the actions that you're taking to redeem those relationships and put Christ at the center of this is what I want to be true versus hanging on to them for a purpose of what? Self-enjoyment, right? It's comfortable to have my current friend group. Principle growth and comfort can't coexist. Growth and comfort don't get to coexist. And so, like, if your aim is growth, but you're like, man, I'm not going to grow through this friendship, or I'm going to grow towards, it's not good company fixes bad morals. It's the opposite. That's something that's true. And so it's going, okay, what's the reality? I want to be true.
I love that you asked this question because I had a lot of friends, and I have a lot of friends that are not believing friends. And there's a difference between familiarity and comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think we are familiar with good friends, and that's familiarity is good, but we should be uncomfortable in the sense that I need to be thinking, how can I encourage that person? My thing is, have unbelieving friends, but make sure that you are spending significant time with your believing friends, your huddle, your group, a band of brothers who are going to walk through the life with you, but don't abandon those friends. God put them in your life for a reason. We got to walk with them. Got to spend time with them. Try to find, like, one of the things I learned years ago is, like, stop talking, Atchison. Ask more questions. And so ask questions, and God will open doors of conversation you never dreamed possible. So, yeah, I think it's attention. If all your friends, though, are more, you're spending more time with the unbelieving friends, I would say I would check that. I would really challenge that. Don't abandon them. You just need to have those band of brothers.
Yeah. Leadership, basic definition of leadership is taking people from here to there, right? This is where you are, and you're leading them to somewhere else. And so whether that's in a friend group or in a relationship, if someone depends on you, you're a leader. Therefore, asking the question, what am I called to do and lead in this season? In that relationship, one, lead yourself. Where are you now? Where do you want to go? But then also in those relationships, people are depending on you, where you're leading them. We've got time for one more. We've got time for one. One more question. Thought, observation. You're like,
So I turned 50 last year, and I was drawn to the idea of the word momentum in this session. So I don't know if everybody's experienced this at that age, but maybe you had a lot of momentum for a while, and you find that maybe you start to lose a little more.
Yeah.
Maybe in the middle of life. Would you have anything to say about regaining? You've been a person of momentum in the past.
Yeah. I would, just because I've been past that point. I I think you're, I love the question, by the way. Love the question. And I think what I've been learning to help me sort of regain momentum is I feel like the Lord started several years ago to have me start digging deeper into purpose. But not just like purpose of life, but I mean purpose in everything that I'm involved in, what I'm doing, what is related to business, related to relationships. Like, what is your purpose? And really try, you know, I feel like I'm learning new things. I think one of the reasons why we sort of get to a point where we can coast. You know, I know enough. I can coast. But when I start really asking the bigger questions about life and business, and I begin to really commit myself to being a student, to learning, that's when things start churning again and I've gotten momentum. And like for me, like I like hanging out, honestly, except for a couple of y'all, I like hanging out with people y'all's age more than people my peers' age, because I get energy from that and it causes me to learn new things. And I, you know, mainly how uncool I am, but still, I'm learning new things. So I just think I would say those two things have really made a difference for me. So
I have a great podcast for you. If you're a podcaster, I'd love to just get your number. I'll text it to you.
Right.
It's literally how to get momentum when you've lost it. That's the title of the podcast. Yeah. So yeah.
Thanks for the time. I know we got to switch, go to the next workshop, but it's been fun, man.
Man, let's go. Thanks so much, Dave.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good
guys.
Times.